This is Harv Aronson of the Total Sports Recall Podcast, and when I start my workday, it always begins with that morning shower. Normally, I use a liquid body wash, but recently I purchased a bar of Sterling Soap Company's handcrafted bath soap and decided to give their Deep Blue Sea handcrafted bath soap a try. Immediately, the aroma of Sterling's bath soap was obvious, and in using this soap, I felt refreshed, clean, energized, and Sterling's bath soap helped me step out of that shower with the momentum and eagerness to get my day rolling. If you want to get a refreshing wake-up call in the morning and get your busy day off to the right start, I highly recommend going to Sterling Soap Company's website and order one of their many varieties of bath soaps among other products they offer. Visit Sterling Soap Company at sterlingsoap.com. That's S-T-I-R-L-I-N-G soap.com.
This podcast is part of the Sports History Network, your headquarters for the yesteryear of your favorite sport. You can learn more at sportshistorynetwork.com. Welcome to the Pro Football Time Machine. This is your host, Tom Pollen, along with Zozo the Cat. Before we start our journey, please take a moment to click on the subscribe button so you're ready to join Zozo and I each time we make a trip into the past. Now, join us as we slip from the present day through the time portal and begin our journey. Today, we're highlighting the career of Kent McClellan, who recently celebrated his 86th birthday. Land on his page on Pro Football Reference, and it's likely that you'd barely give it a glance before moving on. Stay, and you'll see a six-season career that had a brilliant start, but disappointing finish. The two first-team All-Pro honors will grab your eye, but a look at the final three seasons of McClellan's career, and it will have you wondering what happened. It will probably also have you wondering why I'm spending a Pro Football Time Machine episode on him. Oh, quiet, Zozo. The fact is, McClellan left a lasting mark on the NFL that I will say extends to the present day. During McClellan's brief time in professional football, he stamped his name on what became known as bump and run pass coverage. Kent McClellan began to demonstrate his outstanding athletic abilities in high school in Broken Bow, Nebraska. He was a two-way player on the gridiron at running back and safety. As a running back, he averaged 10 yards per carry and scored more than half of his team's points. As a safety, McClellan was a ball hawk who roamed sideline to sideline to make tackles. When McClellan wasn't playing football, he kept busy setting the pace on the track team and leading his high school conference in scoring in basketball. When it was time for college, McClellan stayed in state, enrolling at the University of Nebraska. His arrival coincided with Bob Devaney taking over as the Cornhuskers head coach and the rise of the program into a national powerhouse. McClellan continued his two-way play for the Cornhuskers, again playing halfback on offense and safety on defense, despite a senior season where McClellan led the nation in total touchdowns, he let it be known that he saw himself as a defensive back on the pro level. In the 1965 American Football League draft, the Houston Oilers grabbed McClellan in the 11th round, 82nd overall, in an attempt to fix their AFL worst pass defense. On the NFL side, in 1964, the Washington Redskins had put the best safety tandem on the gridiron with Jim Steffen and Hall of Famer Paul Krause. They needed to be stronger at cornerback, though. Washington picked McClellan in the third round, 34th overall. What neither team was aware of, though, the Oakland Raiders had already acquired McClellan's professional rights. After all, this was a time when teams were going behind each other's backs to sign top players. And the early 1960s was a great era for players to sign for top dollar, with two leagues vying for their services. After the AFL-NFL merger, the players wouldn't find themselves in another advantageous negotiating position again until the start of free agency. In 1965, McClellan arrived in Oakland and started all games at left cornerback. On his right was Dave Grayson, a corner the Raiders acquired from the Kansas City Chiefs in exchange for Fred Williamson. Yes, that Fred Williamson, who became an actor and appeared in MASH and From Dusk Till Dawn, among many other movies and TV shows. Together, they formed one of the top lockdown secondaries in the AFL. In 1966, McClellan and Grayson snared 7 interceptions and made the Raiders' defense the stingiest in the AFL in passing yards allowed. For their efforts, both were named to the AFL Pro Bowl and earned postseason All-Pro honors. McClellan on the first team, Grayson on the second team. For the 1967 season, Hall of Fame cornerback Willie Brown joined the Raiders as the right cornerback opposite McClellan, while Grayson terrorized opposing offenses at free safety. With the two top-flight corners locking down opposing receivers, Oakland finished third in passing yards allowed, second in interceptions, and second in passer rating allowed at 47.9. After 3 seasons in the AFL, Kent McClellan had established dominance over an AFL receiver group that included Otis Taylor, Don Maynard, Lance Allworth, Willie Frazier, and many others. One of the reasons for that dominance was the athletic ability that McClellan brought to Oakland. The other is the innovation and mastery of the bump and run coverage technique. So, who put the ram in the ram-a-lam-a-ding-dong? Who put the bump in the bump and run? As it turns out, the coverage technique hasn't existed since the beginning of the passing game. For the longest time, defenders ran with receivers down the field without contact until approximately the late 1950s or early 1960s, depending on which people you listen to. Ask 5 of those people who invented bump and run coverage, and you'll get 6 different names. One is Chicago cornerback J.C. Caroline, who made the Bears' secondary a danger zone for receivers. In Detroit, you'll hear tales of Hall of Fame defensive back Dick Night Train Lane, who lived to separate receivers from the football. How about San Francisco 49ers great Abe Woodson? A problem is, Woodson admitted that he didn't start using bump and run until late in his career. I know that isn't 6 names, but you get my point. The bump and run origin story, and one that I believe tells the true story, comes from the work of a Hall of Famer. No, not Pro Football Hall of Famer. A Basketball Hall of Famer. Before he moved on to the hardwood, Casey Jones was a throwaway 30th round selection in the 1955 NFL draft by the Los Angeles Rams. In training camp, the 6'1", 200-pound Jones started impressing coaches as a defensive back. How? By lining up directly in front of a receiver and, at the snap, using his basketball defense skills to push and hand-check him off his route and out of the play. When the receivers complained, Rams defensive back coach Jack Faulkner did a thorough check of the rule book. What he found was nothing. There wasn't anything in the rule book against what Jones was doing. Jones played in 2 preseason games, but decided that football wasn't for him. Celtics fans will never forget Jones' contributions to the great Boston championship teams of the 1960s. Faulkner never forgot him either. In 1960, Faulkner made the move to the upstart AFL, becoming defensive backs coach for the Los Angeles Chargers, and he brought the bump and run technique to the new league with him. Former Raiders head coach John Madden always credited McClellan with originating bump and run. McClellan never took credit for inventing the technique, but he did believe he was the first to use it regularly. After all, With all the stars who have been credited with using this technique, none put their personal stamp on it. McClellan had the athleticism to keep from getting beaten off the line of scrimmage. He was tougher than any receiver in the league and could easily body them off their routes. McClellan also had track star speed to keep from getting beat deep if a receiver did slip past him. Kent McClellan took bump and run coverage and made it his own. In 1967, when Willie Brown arrived in Oakland from Denver, where he learned bump and run from the master, Broncos head coach Jack Faulkner, the Raiders' secondary became a danger zone for opposing receivers. The Super Bowl-bound Raiders squeezed opposing offenses to 2,165 passing yards and a 47.9 passer rating that season. Unfortunately for that Oakland defense, in Super Bowl II, they ran into Bart Starr and a Green Bay Packers team that was ready to put their stamp on NFL history as the team that owned the 1960s. In 1968, McClellan suffered a serious knee injury in a Week 10 game against the Denver Broncos. Even with McClellan sidelined, the Oakland pass defense continued at an elite level with Willie Brown and safeties Jack Tatum and George Atkinson continuing to wage war against opposing receivers. Finally, after the 1973 season, the NFL said enough. In the divisional round of the playoffs, the defending Super Bowl champion Miami Dolphins were set to play the Cincinnati Bengals. Miami wasn't worried about facing legendary head coach Bob Brown. After all, they had a legend of their own pacing the sidelines in Don Shula. The Dolphins also had their own Pro Bowl quarterback in Bob Greasy to match up against Cincinnati hotshot Ken Anderson. What they didn't have was anyone who could match up with the Bengals' world-class speedster, wide receiver Isaac Curtis. Shula had all-pro safeties Dick Anderson and Jake Scott push, bump, and hold Curtis all game. The Bengals star finished the game with one catch for 9 yards in a 34-16 win by Miami. That offseason, Paul Brown pushed for what became known as the Isaac Curtis rule against vehement opposition by Shula and the Dolphins. The rule stated that contact with a wide receiver was only allowed once after he was 3 yards beyond the line of scrimmage. Brown's argument for the rule was, "What good is it for us to have performers if they aren't allowed to perform?" The Isaac Curtis rule didn't end the war between receivers and defensive backs, though. Even though receivers were able to get off the line, they were still taking punishment as they ran their routes or reaching to catch a pass. It became apparent to the NFL Rules Committee that they needed to do more to free up receivers from being roughed up downfield. Safeties, particularly Pittsburgh Steelers Hall of Famer Mel Blunt, had the combination of strength and speed to harass and flatten receivers without getting beat deep. Before the 1978 season, as the NFL prepared to expand to a 16-game season, they made a couple of moves to continue freeing up the passing game. They changed the definition of holding, allowing offensive linemen to extend their arms and open their hands while pass blocking. The competition committee also passed what became known as the Mel Blunt rule. It restricted contact with receivers beyond 5 yards downfield. The rule didn't restrict Blunt's ability to cover. He continued to amass multiple interceptions in every full season he played until his retirement after the 1983 season. The result of the rule was astounding. In 1977, only running back Lydell Mitchell surpassed 70 receptions, and only three receivers topped 800 receiving yards. In 1978, reception totals barely moved the needle, but receiving yards exploded. Four receivers topped 1,000 receiving yards, while seven pass catchers surpassed an average of over 20 yards per reception. As the NFL entered the 1980s, the running game began to take a back seat to the passing game in offenses, as wide receivers celebrated the rules turn in their favor. The passing game dominance continues to this day, although the running attack is returning to prominence over the last few seasons. After spending 1968 and 1969 playing limited games due to his injured knee, McClellan played 13 games in 1970. He also set his single season high in interceptions with 5. In the offseason, the Raiders traded McClellan and tackle Harry Shue to the Los Angeles Rams for future Hall of Fame tackle Bob Brown and 2 draft picks. In July, McClellan informed the Rams that he had decided to retire. One question that can be asked about McClellan is, if his career had continued on the same path as his first 3 seasons, could he have finished with a Hall of Fame caliber career? According to Pro Football Reference, McClellan's player comps after 3 seasons included Hall of Famers Mel Renfro, Deion Sanders, and Ed Reed. On that basis, it seems clear that McClellan could have achieved enshrinement. In 1972, Oakland general manager, Hall of Fame executive Ron Wolf, hired McClellan as a scout, and he excelled in that position, the same way as he did on the field. He found many talented players for Oakland over the years, including wide receiver Cliff Branch. During player reviews, McClellan was the one the Raiders turned to for a final opinion. As we said at the open of this episode, Kent McClellan's career is easy to overlook. He only played 6 seasons, and the final 3 were a struggle. The Pro Football Hall of Fame would never come calling. Hell, they never asked anyone directions to his house. However, McClellan left an unmistakable legacy. He developed and refined a coverage technique that left flattened receivers in its wake. Bump and run made him an all-pro and convinced a league full of defensive backs to make the coverage their own, revolutionizing pass defense. That the NFL had to step in to allow receivers a bigger impact on the game led to a revolution on offense that continues to this day. That's a hell of a legacy for a 6-year career. Zozo and I hope you enjoyed this trip into pro football's past to tell the story of someone who made an enduring impact on the game and the rulebook. Come back next time for another story uncovered from the history of the game we love.
Hi, this is Joe Ziumba, and I'm the host of the podcast When Football Was Football here on the Sports History Network. This podcast is based on stories, events, and characters from my book called When Football Was Football, The Chicago Cardinals and the Birth of the NFL, which was written shortly after the Cardinals won their last championship in 1947, or so it seems. The reason for this message is twofold. First, to share the great news that the second edition of the book has just been released by McFarland Publishers. And all Sports History Network listeners can now enter a special Sports History Network contest for the opportunity to win one of 2 free copies of When Football Was Football. We'll be happy to include a personal inscription in each winner's book and then send it out to you with our best wishes. The new book contains about 80 more pages than the original, almost all new archival photos, additions within all chapters based on new research, and an update on the players, coaches, and administrators mentioned in the book. It's everything you ever wanted to know about the early Cardinals, as well as the NFL itself. To enter this free giveaway, go to sportshistorynetwork.com/giveaways. Thank you.